So how do you prepare for this role?
I don't know. I'm giving much thought. Actually, once my makeup artist and my hairdresser kind of, we collaborated on what I wanted to look like and get all those things together. The rest of it was pretty much, you know, doing the stuff you always do to make a character kind of fit in the environment that the script calls for. And just trying to cement the truth of who he thinks he is or who he's created for himself in terms of who he really is, and trying to make those layers kind of fit so that when an audience watches it, they'll kind of believe it as much as he does, to the point that I always thought if you gave Champ a lie detector test about Bob Satterfield, he'd pass it because he'd been living in that space for so long.
And I couldn't help but notice something you said in the production notes, how you had to dig deep.
I don't know where that came from. Everybody keeps asking me about that quote, and I keep going, what are you talking about? No, I don't know. I mean, it was kind of no different than developing another character. And I didn't particularly think he was in a really bad space. I mean, he's kind of okay with where he is in terms of not being bitter about what life dealt him and him having a full life and being in that particular place. And he's still kind of a celebrity in his own little world there.
Did something jump out at you, like once, because this, you know, we've seen you in lots of roles in drama, action, whatever. But something like this, immediately when I saw it, just looked like you had a different look to you in your face. I mean, was there something that jumped out that you saw?
Yeah, all that makeup. No, just, you know, it's kind of a nice full character and interesting to kind of, you know, explore the layers of who he is, or from a person who says they've lived a life that was in this particular place. You know, being number 3 ranked fighter in the world is a high place to be, and then they end up in this very low place, how you get there and what, you know, kinds of things that, you know, got him from that place to the next place to the next place, you know. And then you realize, you know, the guy could fight and that's all he could do, and he didn't have any other real life skills that would help him be something else. You know, he couldn't, you know, there was no outlet for him to be George Foreman. So he couldn't sell grills, and he couldn't be a fight commentator. So he's pretty much, you know, stuck to this little world that he's in.
You mentioned research and everything. I know that the screenplay was based upon a LA Times story, and there was
a real Bob Satterfield. Yes.
The only significant difference being that he was caught just before it went to publication. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering. So I would have figured maybe you'd sit, you know, hang with him, get to know the guy a little bit, or is it more?
No. Well, I don't know. Nobody made me that offer, and it's not something that I, you know, felt like I needed to do. It's kind of like not feeling like I needed to go to the gym and box for a while and get into that mode. It's kind of like, okay, I know what this is now, I understand it, and it's more about relationships than anything else. And him understanding that this kid was trying to live up to his father's kind of legacy. And helping him by telling the story. And like I said, for him, the story is as much true as anything else. So when Josh's character uncovers whatever he uncovers or gets made aware of it, it's kind of like as much of a shock to Champ that he has to go back and remember, oh yeah, I was somebody else. That's because he's been in that space so long that he's told a lie that it reaches a point where it's not a lie, it's just a story about his life.
Like, you know, when we first get introduced to your character, you know, when we first see you digging through the dustbins and stuff like that, you know, for a moment I had a flashback to Jungle Fever with Spike Lee, for some reason, with the whole,
really?
the whole crap, and of course Caveman's Valentine, just the way you looked and the whole, you know, the character that you play. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of wondering, do you have what's your relationship with Spike Lee these days, and will we see you in a future Lee movie?
I don't know.
And what about Casey Dayton?
I have a relationship with Spike, yes. We know each other, yes. We still, you know, talk to each other in our apartments in New York, are very close to each other. So, I don't know. I know he's getting ready to do a movie about some black World War II soldiers in Tuscany or somewhere, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, Quentin's getting ready to do the same movie, so I don't know.
And what's usually, just a two-fold question, because you do like four or five movies a year, roughly? What's your criteria in picking these projects? I mean, you're reading so many scripts a week. What do you look for? Do you have any sort of...
Look for good stories. Mm-hmm. Good stories and great characters on the inside of them. You know, amazingly enough, you know, you read 6-7 scripts a week, find like 3 a month that makes sense. It's kind of interesting how much bad stuff people write. You know, so It's a difficult task. It's not as easy as people would like to think. You know, people go, "Well, you must have scripts all over." I said, "Well, yeah, but they're not all good. You know, if I did everything that came across my desk, I'd be doing a lot of bad stuff."
What's it like working with Lori?
How was that? It was cool. You know, it's interesting though. Rod's kind of background in terms of the military aspect of it and the whole West Point kind of thing, and then being a film critic, and then you know, being a sports fan of another nature, and then being a producer of another, you know, kind of television show and all those other things. It's great that he's trusting enough after we've gone through the rehearsal period and kind of fixed everything we think we need to fix, that he just kind of leaves us alone and lets us do what we need to do to make it happen. And it was kind of cool for me because I was always surprising him, because, you know, a lot of stuff I didn't know. Once we got the look, I wasn't real sure how I needed to move, or what being, you know, that old and being a fighter of that nature would, you know, take me to. So once I got hold of the cart, you know, I didn't realize they were going to make it that heavy, number one. So it's kind of incumbent upon me to find a way to pull that thing around and make sense. So I just decided I'd do road work. You know, so he's just kind of jogging all the time. And the voice actually became, you know, my grandfather's voice was kind of a voice that always made me kind of lean over and go, "What was that you said?" And it kind of pulls people towards you and makes them listen to you in an intense kind of way.
You know, I was thinking, if this had been made, let's say, 20 years ago, I think that the the Josh Hartnett arc would have, the shock of his getting it this wrong would have been a huge shocker. Much more of a standout than it is now. It's almost like you were saying that you were talking about screenwriters, and mm-hmm. it's how much bad stuff gets written. It seems like 10, 15 years, more and more journalists have got an egg on their face, big time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if you had any observations of your own dealing with journalists, what you do, and whether that has been a increasing thing, or has that always been the case?
I don't know. I guess we know more about it now because there's more information. You know, that was a time we didn't have as much information. We only had, we had newspapers, we had radio, we had television, Time, Newsweek, pretty much it. You know, all of a sudden with the internet, there's a lot of competition for that information and how that information gets disseminated, and how, you know, it's almost like that game we used to play when you were a kid where somebody would give you a sentence and then you whisper it to the next person and they whisper it to the next person, and by the time it got to the ninth person, it was totally different. So it seems like the more news outlets we have, the more the news gets kind of translated in whoever, whatever way that people want to translate it. So even if a story starts out as being accurate and factual, by the time you get to the end of it, you've used somebody else's quote, from somebody else's quote, from somebody else's quote, that almost the facts have been left out, and it's what, well, this is the way I heard it.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of diluted and kind of jacked up at that point.
Is your producing pile of scripts getting a little bit bigger now than your acting?
Not really. I keep looking at stuff that I want to produce, and sometimes, well, I have the first look deal with New Line, so I take the stuff to New Line, and they go, "No." And then I, you know, start figuring out where I want to, you know, farm it out and see who else might want to do it. So I look at more stuff, but it's almost like if I'm not going to do it, they don't want to do it. And it's sort of the same problem, I guess, that I used to have when I used to get scripts. And people would say, "Well, we want to make this, but we want to make this with you in it." And I go, "Well, I'm not available." And I go, "Well, we'll wait." And I go, "Well, there's like 8 actors out there that's capable of doing this, but they're not looking for that actor. They're just looking for me to do it, or Denzel, or somebody else." So.
Do you think you've reached a stage where your name can just about greenlight any project?
No, if that was the case, I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be like trying to get somebody else to do it.
Maybe at a certain budget, maybe.
Well, everybody works at a certain budget. You know, there's certain people that, you know, well, everybody wants to make their movie for $10 million. You know, 5 if they can get away with it. And then when you start getting to 15, 20, 22, then people start thinking about the major thing that they want to know is, can we sell you foreign? Because, I mean, even if you look at this weekend's box office, The Simpsons made $71 million here, but they made almost $140 million in the world. So it's all about how much money you can make in the world, not how much you can make here in America.
Are we likely to see you and Quentin Tarantino work together in the near future?
I don't know. If he calls me. No, it's not like we're making a plan together. You know, I know he's also doing this World War II film that's about these black soldiers that he's been writing for 10 years. Now I hear he's almost done with it, so maybe I'll finally get to do it.
Inglorious Bastards.
Yeah, exactly. He's been trying to do that, or writing it forever. And I think.
But again, what makes a good story for you? You were saying that you pick up the roles according to the story, and this is.
Well, for me, it's difficult to say. You look at the films that I do, and it's because I see a story, and I see myself in this story, and it's something that I want to see on screen. It's something that I would pay my money to go and see. That's first of all. And I don't know. You know, I don't know if something's wrong with my taste. I don't know if my taste is okay. You know, some of the films that I do are very popular, and some of them, I don't know, people talk about them in a very strange and interesting sort of way. It's kind of like the last movie, Black Snake Moan. You know, I thought it was a great premise and interesting kind of thing to do, and then all of a sudden people started going crazy about it, but I think that had more to do with the poster than the movie. You know, people actually talked about what they thought the movie was about because they didn't go see it, or somebody who did go see it had some kind of wrong reaction to it. But all of a sudden when it gets to video, now I hear people going, wow, that movie's great. You know, what happened to that movie? Well, why didn't I just, well, you didn't see it because you saw the poster or you didn't go, but... Yeah, but it's always something that I would pay my money to go and see, and that's what makes a good story for me. That doesn't necessarily mean it is a good story, because I go to strange movies and I sit at home and watch, you know, strange movies that I read. That most people don't like subtitles, and I do.
Black Snake Moan was a really satisfying moral fable.
Yeah, really. Well, yeah. See, like this time last year, I thought, you know, Snakes on the Plane would make $300 million, and it made 10, and here we are. So who knows?
What do you think it was about that movie, Snakes on a Plane, which made it so big, to make such a...
Big yeah. What? It was a big disappointment?
No, I mean, it did well.
Did it?
Not in relation.
Not in relation to what everybody thought it would do. I mean, it just really goes to show that, you know, people that sit at home and do this and do stuff and talk about films don't go to movies. You know, and that's been proven by other films. It just happens. I don't know what that is.
Was it 1408 then?
Well, you know, that's another kind of, you know, I like the story and I like Stephen King. I had no idea what was really going on. I read the script for sure. But, you know, when I got to London to shoot my part, I shot my part. I didn't know what John and all those other guys were doing in that room. So when I saw it, it was kind of like, wow, this is very cool. It's a very old school kind of horror movie. You know, who knows that that's going to work at the premiere or the first screening. Because people are, you know, so used to going to the hostels and the, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacres and you know, The Eye and everything else. So audiences have been trained to like another kind of film. But apparently, there's still an audience for a psychological thriller that
great
works.
Great stories, I think. You know? Torture porn done.
Hmm?
Did you and Josh talk about anything? And do you, like, as far as, you know, your relationship on screen to, you know, like off screen?
Not outside rehearsal. You know, we did the rehearsal period. We went through all the scenes. We talked about those kinds of things while we were, you know, working on the development of the characters and their relationship. But past that, you know, we just kind of hung out and talked about, you know, other stuff. Because I don't get to hang out with guys like that a lot. You know, the younger generation of actor, you know, who's actually sort of part of the tabloid kind of world and still in the club scene and, you know, young, good-looking, people are interested in his life. So, you know, I kind of questioned him about how that was and how he kind of dealt with that kind of stuff, because I watched him move around Calgary. And, you know, even in Calgary, there's the, you know, paparazzi and all that kind of stuff. And that's kind of a new kind of American phenomenon that we didn't have for a very long time. That's always been part of the European entertainment scene. The stalkerazzi. It only happened to me when I'm in London or when I'm in Paris or in Italy or Germany. Now, all of a sudden, so I came out of the grocery store the other day, and there's dudes there with cameras. Kind of like, what the fuck? Buying groceries. One guy's got like a mini cam. And what'd you buy? It's like, who fucking cares what I got in my grocery bag? Come on.
How do you deal with that on a daily basis when you see yourself on a, you know, someone takes a photograph of you?
It's just stupid to me. It's kind of like, I'm buying groceries too. You know, I go to the grocery store like everybody else. You know, so. But I guess it's part. All of a sudden, I've been kind of discovered in another kind of way because the Beckhams moved close to my neighborhood. So now when I come out of my neighborhood, there's like all these guys standing around in SUVs with cameras. They're just waiting on them, and they go, let's have Jackson! They jump in the car, and they're like, shh. So like three of them will chase me now. It's like, fuck.
But you say sometimes they mistake you for Lawrence, right? Don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes, but they know, yeah. So it's just new.
You still have an interest in boxing?
I watch boxing.
Who was the champ for you?
Hmm?
Who was the champ for you? Who was your personal champ in boxing?
Oh, well, Ali is always everybody's crowd favorite, you know. I grew up, you know, around him, but I also grew up listening to fights on the radio with my grandfather, you know, so I remember those days, too.
Is any plans to direct a movie or something?
Okay. Well, if they stop calling me to act, I might have to if I want to get in a movie.
Josh Hartnett in The Black Dahlia or Bob Saturday in this, who do you think would win in a fight?
Oh. Wow. Satterfield, you mean?
Satterfield, sorry.
Mm, yeah, probably Satterfield. Yeah. From a tougher era. You know, guys fought a lot more then, in those days.
Yeah. What about you? In your prime against... And I mean, do you think you could...
You know, I didn't enjoy boxing when I did it. You know, I did it because, you know, my mom thought it was something I should learn to do, and you do it, and you reach, you know, sort of... personal challenges because guys challenge you because you're quicker and you're faster and they see you beat up somebody that they thought that, you know, you shouldn't have beat. So you test yourself in that kind of way. But I never liked being hit, you know. I was a boxer. I wasn't a brawler, you know. I totally thought boxing is the art of hitting and not being hit. Getting hit in the face is not a way to make a living.
Do you like anybody among the Democratic presidential candidates right now?
Why you gotta be Democrat? Why can't I like a Republican?
No.
Do I like anybody? You know what? Nobody actually stands for anything right now. You know, nobody has a real policy statement about how are you gonna fix what's wrong? And until somebody gives me that kind of information, then I'm not gonna really make a decision.
Barack Obama's saying he wants to talk to people. He doesn't want to say I won't talk to him.
Well, everybody says they want to talk. What do you want to talk about?
Or Hillary says she doesn't want to talk about state work. She's saying I won't. You know, they had an argument last
year. I read that. Yeah, babe.
We're ready.
All right. Okay. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks.